This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Hi, I'm Tony La Russa, and you're listening to Baseball Outside the Box with Pete Caliendo.
This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Baseball Outside the Box, the educational podcast for coaches, players, and parents from all over the world, where we bring you the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge of status quo. And I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. I want to thank the Lineup Media Group. Don't forget, go to lineupmediagroup.fm to listen to some of the best podcasts in the world. Today, we are very lucky to be in Kiev, Ukraine. We are here with the International Sports Group doing a coaches clinic. We just got done. It's Sunday night. We just finished the clinic, and we worked with coaches, players, and also had a special meeting with parents where we educated parents in a lot of areas, especially about attitude and how to, you know, work or watch ball games or let kids play. So it was just a great weekend. People here love the game of baseball, and the coaches love to learn. And on top of it, we had two of some of the best instructors in the world, two great friends of mine. First of all, Cash Beauchamp, a number one pick when he was a player, a professional player, also former manager of independent baseball. So he's got a tremendous amount of managing experience. We're going to talk to him a little bit about that, along with currently now he does all the independent tryouts for the Arizona Diamondbacks. So he's also a scout. And along with him is a great long friend of mine, longtime friend, Chris Carminucci, now the pro scout for the Arizona Diamondbacks and a former also manager in independent baseball. So it's great to have two managers, instructors, teachers that have been in the game a long time. They can actually teach at all levels and give you a great understanding how to work with players in different parts, whether it's at the big league level all the way down to the youth. So first of all, let me welcome Cash Beauchamp to the show. Cash, how you doing, man?
Thanks, Pete, man. It's great to be here, and I really appreciate you for inviting me here to Kiev, Ukraine. Probably a month ago, if somebody said I was going to be in Kiev, Ukraine, I would have said you're crazy. But what a lifetime experience this has been, and it's just been a wonderful experience to talk and teach these young players and the parents and everybody here. And I was surprised that baseball was even a sport here. So it's just been a lifetime experience. I appreciate you bringing me.
Awesome. And folks, just so you know, what made this clinic really unique was, you know, we got great teachers, we got great instructors. That was there, no doubt about it. But what made it even extra special is when we hung out with the local coaches, with the local organization, you know, we went out, had dinner. These guys got great personalities, and the people here just loved them. And, you know, not only, you know, it gives the U.S., first of all, you know, it shows that there's good people in the United States. But on top of it, you know, just they treat people really well, and that was really part of the program also. So now let me introduce to you Chris Carminucci. And Chris, and you've known Chris because he's been on the show before. So, Chris, thanks for being on again. I know it's, 11:15 here in Kiev, and you guys got a 4 o'clock flight.
Pete, it's great to be back here again with you, and a little past my bedtime tonight, but happy to be here. And, hey, this has been a fantastic trip, and anywhere with you is fantastic. But here in the Ukraine, I mean, people here are truly special. They love the game of baseball, and they love unity, and there's a lot of fellowship and friendship that went on here, and happy to be here. Thank you.
And you know what, folks? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk to, at the beginning, I want you to get the impression of what this is all about. I'm going to ask both Chris and Cash about their experience here, and then we're going to get into what they taught at the clinic, because that's important from the educational side. So, Cash, let's start with you. First impression, with the coaches especially, coaches and players, what was your first impression, how they reacted to what you were teaching?
You know, Peter, I really thought when I came here that we would be working with some people that were very raw in the game of baseball. I was really surprised at the talent level of the players here. I mean, honestly, I would have thought I was working, besides the language barrier, I would have thought I was working with American kids the same age. So there is some baseball going on here in Kiev. And these coaches are obviously getting some good points through to them through the internet or wherever they're getting their information. And I feel like when we were here that we got a tremendous amount of information to these guys that they may have never learned before that may be able to take these kids to the next level.
Chris, you know, and I know you've obviously been to a lot of countries and worked with coaches. What was your impression about when you were given the instruction? You know, were these coaches hungry? You know, did they want more information? Maybe some of the answers that they gave, what kind of opinion did you get on what they knew about the game?
Yeah, you know, first I want to say that you could definitely see the impact that International Sports Group and you have made here over time, because I know you've been here before. And these coaches here obviously have retained a lot of knowledge and have used that knowledge to then teach some of their younger coaches and then on to the players from there. But, you know, I have to say this, is I thought that all the coaches, and what I was most impressed about with all the coaches, was their hunger to learn more. You know, as coaches, we constantly have to thirst for knowledge. We constantly have to ask ourselves, what else can I learn? I've been in this game my whole life. I'm learning something every day. I learned from you. I learned from Cash while I was here. And, you know, I learned from some of the parents because things change a little bit, you know, how we coach our kids. So I think at the end of the day, what we're doing here is we're taking what they know. We're trying to enhance it. But this is as much of a learning experience for me from a cultural standpoint as it was a baseball experience. So I'm just super impressed. And what I like and what I'm looking for is I see what ISG has done and what you have done. It's working. We just got to keep going, keep doing this, keep spreading the gospel of baseball, and good things will happen.
Thank you. And what Chris is talking about, too, is that ISG is working really hard on expanding worldwide. We're all over the world now, but we continue to expand because we honestly believe that coaches' education is the foundation of this great sport that we all love. And if we can educate coaches at the grassroots level all over the world, the game's just going to grow. And since we're on coaching, this is the part that we really want to get into. Some of the things while you were talking, and I'm going to talk to Cash about this, some of the things that you were talking about at the clinic, if you were to talk about what it takes to be a quality coach, quality manager, give us some of your opinions of what it takes to be at that level and what you would express to them how they should be as coaches.
Well, as a coach, and I was fortunate enough to coach professionally as a hitting coach for 3 years with the Montreal Expo organization, very proud to say that a young man that I coach was just inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, Vladimir Guerrero. And to be honest with you, I really didn't coach that guy. I just tried not to mess that guy up. He was that good. And I just wanted to send a little shout out, you know, to Vlad, because this guy was a phenomenal athlete, and he was very coachable. He would listen. He was very respectful. And I think the key word there when I talk about Vlad is the word respect. And when I try to get some of the qualities that coaches need to have to be a quality coach is the number one thing that you want to really work for, and you have to work for this, is to earn your players' respect. And respect is not demanded, it's earned. And I believe the number one thing that you do to earn a player's respect is to give them your honesty and to give them your trust. And through honesty and trust, the player themselves will know that you have their best interest at heart. And a lot of times I think as coaches we get a little too self-centered. I think we think that our value, or even sometimes our manhood, is determined by winning or losing a baseball game, and it's really not. The key to being a great coach to me is your team better at the end of the year than they were at the beginning of the year, and if you can go out and earn your players' respect through trust and honesty, and you have some knowledge for the game, there's no doubt that you will be lumped into the sum of a great coach.
And folks, you don't know this. Maybe you do. You remember the name Beecham. Cash was very lucky to have a dad who played, you know, a lot of over 10 years in the big leagues, then managed in pro ball, not only at the minor league level, but also coached at the big league level. But here I'd really like to know, having a dad, you know, pretty famous dad, and also guy that managed and coached and all that, you know, how much did you learn from him? And were these the same qualities that you learned from him, or did you add on to that?
You know, I was a lucky kid, Pete, and I grew up in a locker room. I can never remember a time. I always tell people that baseball has put every meal I've ever eaten on the table for me. So growing up with a dad in the major leagues, baseball put the bread on the table. And then when I got out of high school and went to 1 year junior college and was drafted, I've been in baseball ever since. So every meal I've ever eaten has been because of baseball. And obviously my father had a great impact on my career. He never hounded me. He never pounded me to be a ball player. He asked me what my goals were, what I wanted to do with the game. And I think he knew that my goal was to be a professional baseball player and at least to get a scholarship to get my education paid for. And I remember one day where he put a sign up above my bed. And this was the extent of his coaching. And when I say the extent of his coaching, I think the motivation factor came from the sign he put above my bed, and it was, what did you do today to get a college scholarship? Because I felt like I would have to go to college before I played pro ball, which was true. And, you know, Dad would help me with little fundamental things here and there, but he didn't pound me to play baseball. It was something I wanted, but he told me what I had to do, how I had to do it. He put that sign above my bed. Then it was up to me. And, you know, I think that's the best thing my dad ever did for me.
Fantastic. And, folks, I mean, if you're a parent out there, hopefully you take that at heart, that sometimes, you know, you don't need to put the pressure on your kids. Let them play the game, be there for them, be supportive. And you heard it from Cash, you know, how his dad treated him, which obviously is at a high level, and there's a lot of pressure at that level. Now, we're going to turn over to Chris, and you didn't know this. Here's the interesting part. You know, Chris managed, coached, and I want to get your perspective because, you know, at the younger levels, and we say this a lot on the show, it's about working with young kids, developing, the winning will come if you work on the fundamentals and all that. But, Chris, you know, you've got, you know, which is amazing because I've never heard this before. You got like 19 championship rings. I don't know where you put them, if it's in a special safe. But, you know, rings aren't the ultimate answer. But at the same time, you got to be doing something right in dealing with people and managing players because it takes a team to win, but it takes a manager to keep the team in the right direction. Give us some qualities that you think are important for managers or teachers or coaches, and maybe some of the things that you told the coaches here also to help them out.
Yeah, you know, it's been great to win championships and be a part of a lot of winning teams. But, you know, at the same time, it's all about perspective, Pete. You know, it's about putting things in perspective. You know, love, kindness, and receptivity are traits that I try to live by. And, you know, whether it's, you know, being a scout or being a coach, I try to give everything that I can. And like what I talked to the parents about here is that, you know, when we talk about motivation of an athlete, that word itself really doesn't mean a whole lot. It's about inspiring these young people. It's about showing them that you are practicing what you're preaching. And, you know, if you're asking your players to do something and to live by certain rules and ways of life, and then you should practice what you preach. And, you know, we talk about it all the time that, you know, the game mirrors life every day. And especially how it's a game of failure and how hard it is and how hard life can be. So, you know, at the end of the day, all we have is each other. And, you know, we've got to be the kind of people that are giving of ourselves at all time, understanding that we're going to fail. And, you know, we just got to make sure we get back up again, Pete. You know, that's the big thing. We've all been down. You know, we just got to get back up again, look to our teammates for support and give support. And, you know, hey, when a coach has to have that tough conversation like we talked about here, you know, you can do it in a way that's productive and not forceful, you know, and that's what it's all about.
You know what? And, folks, you know, those are great answers, but one thing Carminucci didn't do, he didn't tell us where the rings are at. You know, so
my
I guess
daughters have them.
He said his daughters have them. Those are future, I guess, your future gifts for your daughters for college, right?
Inheritance.
All right, so now you mentioned a key word there. You were talking about, you talked about failure, and I know one of the things that you talked about at the clinic with the coaches also, and a little bit about how to deal with failure. Tell our coaches around the world that since it is a game where, unfortunately, you're going to fail a little bit more often than you would in most sports, what are some of the things that coaches can teach kids how to deal with the failure and how to control their emotions and so forth.
Hey, as a kid that wasn't really good at controlling his emotions, what I did was, I tried to teach these coaches that, you know, you've got to have some time away to have a short-term memory when it comes to baseball. You got to teach these kids to get away from the game for a little bit sometimes, to forget about the tough game they had. And on the other end of that, you don't want to celebrate that good game for 3 weeks. You know, I mean, hey, good and bad, it doesn't define you as a player. It doesn't define you as a person. You know, you're going to have your good days, you're going to have your bad days, but keep it in perspective. Keep it fresh. Get a new outlook on the game every day. And hey, when you're doing the best you can and you're giving it everything you have, nobody's going to judge you anything past that. So it's the words I try to live by. I've certainly failed a lot, and I've certainly won a lot. And for every championship ring, and by the way, I got most of those championship rings thanks to an incredible organization, the Arizona Diamondbacks, who have won a lot of minor league championships. And, so I've been a part of those, thankfully. And, so I've been able to pass the idea of teamwork along to a lot of people, and I feel very blessed to do so.
Awesome. Same question, Cash. Whether you're dealing with young kids, which is probably, and I may be wrong here, but maybe you can address it. You know, failure when it comes to young kids and failure when it comes to the high level, is there a difference? And what are the things that you work with the players, to deal with the failure?
I think educating them on what failure is in baseball is the most important thing. I think as parents and as young players, we are constantly measuring our children and our players against what they do in school. Obviously, everybody's out to make 100 on a test. And so I think parents, when a kid starts playing baseball, sometimes they expect him to make 100 in a game, where in all reality, baseball, if you succeed at a 30% rate, which is an F in school, and you do that for 10 years in the major leagues, you're a Hall of Famer. So you are going to fail 7 out of 10 times. If that was a spelling test and you get 3 words right on a spelling test and out of 10 words, that is a 30%. That is a failing grade, and nobody's going to be happy with that. The kid's not going to be happy. The parent's not going to be happy. But baseball's a different beast. Baseball, hitting a baseball especially, is the hardest thing to do in all of sports. So if a player, it is very rare for 12 to 15 players to hit 300 in a league at the major league level. I mean, there have been times when 305, 315, 320 won the batting title. And, I've been in leagues in independent ball where I'd say 95% of the league hit under 280. And if you hit 280, you had a great year. And my career batting average, I want people to understand this. I played 14 years in the minor leagues, and my career batting average was 288. And if you think about that, that is failing more than 3 out of 10 times. And I was able to play for 14 years. So let's really understand what failure is. You are going to make more outs than you get hits the rest of your life. So get used to it and understand what success and failure is. It's not defined by what we do on a spelling test in school or a geography test. It's baseball's a different beast. So let's, as a parent, and let's all understand that, and coaches. And it's not just parents, it's coaches too. I mean, when you expect your kid to get a hit every time he goes to the plate as a parent or coach, you're asking him to do something that's impossible. So let's understand what we're trying to do and understand that hitting 288 for 14 years will keep you around a long time, and that's way less than a 300 batting average.
You know what, and that, you know what, it's interesting. I don't know why. Somehow I was thinking while Cash was talking about that hitting, about long term. It almost sounds like you're my financial investor when he says that, you can't look at the short term because, you're going to fail, right? The market's going to go down, it's going to drop, and you panic, and you don't know how to deal with it. But if you look at long term, he's right, man. I mean, you got to look at the long term, because every day the days are going to change, Chris, when you had, here's an interesting question, because when you had a young man, a professional player, that had a bad game, or maybe had two bad games in a row, and you just saw that he was upset so much. I mean, how did you deal with that as a manager? I mean, you just let him stay upset? Did you talk to him? What did you do in that situation?
You know, it's a great question, Pete. You know, and it's something that does happen. People think because they're professionals or because they're high-level players that they don't get upset. They sure do, and they do a lot. And, you know, every player is different, and you treat them all different. And, you know, sometimes you let them go a little bit, and sometimes you let them fester and let them, you know, work it out themselves. Other times you call them in the office, and you have that conversation with them. But, you know, the nicest thing is when you see a player cares, that's what you want. You want that player to care enough to where you don't have to care for him, in other words. So when I had a player that cared, I was always appreciative of it. It's the same kind of thing in any work environment. You want employees that work hard and care. And, you know, the biggest thing is you don't want it to paralyze them. You don't want it to make them not be able to perform. So the biggest thing I always tried to do was relax them, you know. I was always worried about the player that, you know, didn't care, you know, more than anything else. Normally they're not necessarily winning players. Now, there are exceptions, but, you know, you do want that player that cares but doesn't get to the point where he analyzes things to paralysis. You know, that whole analysis to paralysis thing, it can be really deadly. Keep it simple, you know, the whole KISS theory that everybody talks about, you know, and that's what I try to preach to these guys. Keep it simple, keep it quick, get in, get out, take each day, you know, as a separate day, and do the best you can.
And players, if you're listening to that, understand you're talking to a professional scout. So, you know, when he's talking about those qualities, hopefully that you're listening because these are the guys that pick the players, and they pick them because they want you to, you know, they need winners. They need guys that can deal with the failure and understand it. So, Cash, on the same part, as a player, you know, if you played 14 years that long, obviously you've had days where you, you know, had a lot of failure. How did you deal with that?
Well, not very good when I was a young player. I can tell you that, Pete. You know, I was the first overall pick in 1982 in the January draft. They used to have two drafts. And, you know, I think if you look back at I kind of saw a little bit of this in myself. When you look at Bryce Harper's career when he was a minor leaguer, there were times when Bryce would melt down. He would get kicked out of games. And it's, you know, a lot of people were very hard on him, but I totally understand what the guy was going through. And it basically it's immaturity. And what it was with me is being a first overall pick, you're constantly trying to justify your draft slot. And what that means is if you don't have some mental maturity, that means because you were a number one overall pick, and I think Bryce was exactly like me, because we were first overall picks, we felt like we had to be the best player in the league every year when we really don't. In all reality, we don't. We just have to be, you know, a top 10 guy. So, you know, and so what we do is we put unrealistic expectations on ourselves that if Joe Bag of Donuts for Hagerstown is hitting 320, you know, I've got to hit 340 because I was drafted ahead of him. And that really gets in your head, and you've got to have some maturity to deal with that. And as my career, you know, the best player I ever was, Pete, in my career is when I wasn't a prospect anymore. I got older, but I learned from my mistakes, and that's what I try to do as a coach now when I work with young players or even as a scout when they ask me for advice. I try to tell players that just control what you can control and do the best you can be, or be the best you can be and do the best you can do, and let the chips fall where they're going to fall. And all you got to ask yourself at the end of the day is, did I give it all I got in that game that night? And that's good enough, and that's good enough. And you know, if you bust your tail in the off season and in between games and work your butt off and with some good coaching and with a little bit of help, you know, you'll get where you need to go.
Folks, and I keep saying folks, man, but our audience out there, I don't know if you heard it correctly, and I hope you wrote it down, but you heard you can only control what you can control, and you can't control the uncontrollables. Don't forget that. Write that as a note. Now, we will be right back for the second half of the show, where we would bring back both Chris and Cash and talk to them about what they worked with the coaches, the particular topics, some of the things that worked with them, some of the drills maybe they told them to work on, why and all that. And then after that, we'll have a special guest from Ukraine Baseball, one of the coaches with Ukraine Baseball, talk to them about their development program. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. We're continuing from Kiev, Ukraine, a fantastic city with some wonderful people. We love these people here in Ukraine. We've had a blast. International Sports Group. We had just ended up our coaching clinic. This is the second half of the show. We're bringing back Chris Carminucci and Cash Beecham again before we bring back our Ukrainian coach to talk about some of the development that they do here in Ukraine. So we're going to continue with Chris Carminucci, and we want to get into what Chris talked about at the clinic. It was outstanding. We want to, you know, we talked about practice organization, and I know you've heard us on the show before how important practice organization is to the development of young players. So I want to ask Chris a little bit about what he talked about at the clinic, Chris, and what you emphasized when you talked about practice organization to the coaches here in Ukraine.
You know, the biggest thing I try to talk to him about is, you know, first and foremost, keep it fun. You know, that's the way kids are going to be interested. You got to keep it fun. You have to be organized. You know, I really ask the coaches to go through their organizational plan and their practice plan the night before, have it laid out. That way, when they get there, you know, what I always ask them to do is to, you know, pick one of the players to lead stretch. You know, we're trying to build leaders as we are trying to build baseball players and softball players here. But, you know, when you do that, you empower the young people. And I like that. You know, I think that's a good way to start off your practice. And, you know, from there, while they're stretching, I always like to talk to them about what we're going to do that day. And, you know, again, I try to keep it fun. I try to keep it quick and fast moving so they don't get bored. But, you know, you got to work on those fundamentals. And, you know, first and foremost, you know, we did a drill that, you know, Cash introduced while we were here, a two-man drill where, you know, players were in two lines and going back and forth. And, you know, it was really teaching them to play catch. And, you know, I some of the best baseball people I've ever heard, Cash being one of them, has always said, you know, you got to learn to play catch first and foremost. So, you know, while we're keeping practice short, quick, and fun, those fundamentals and breaking down those fundamentals into small groups as much as you can at practice are big. Because, you know, once they're playing the game, it's very difficult to coach them. And I actually think that when you're playing the game, you got to let what you teach them become habit. And at that point, when it becomes habit, you know they've learned it. You know they've got it. And, you know, through practice, you can create a model in which they will play the game, but you can't play for them. So, you know, we're not trying to create robots here. We're trying to keep it simple. You know, let these kids be able to think on their own and move from there.
You know, you brought up a good point. You talked about a drill, and I was watching a drill. And during that drill that you guys were doing, playing catch and rotating, you seemed to put a time on it, and you put a limit where, you know, they had to see how long they can do it, which showed me that it was under pressure. You know, a lot of times we just practice, but we don't put any pressure. We, you know, there's no game situation type, so all of a sudden they're good in practice, and then they can't do it in a game.
Absolutely. You know, pressure properly channeled is so important, you know, and they're going to have to play under certain elements that aren't always comfortable. And you know what? This is going to follow them into their workplace, into their regular life. And, you know, they've got to be able to perform under pressure. And doing drills like that and making them fun, you know, making them fun where it's not the end of the world if they drop a ball. But, you know, hey, they got to know their teammates are counting on them, too, at the same time. And, you know, while you're not going to make anybody feel bad, you know, hey, when a ball gets dropped, you know, there'll be a little bit of sadness for a minute. Then you pick it back up again and you continue the drill. And you know, teaching them to be human beings. That's what we're doing here. We're teaching them to be, you know, young men and young women that can handle pressure and understand it's a game. And, you know, and by keeping it fun and keeping it light, but also a little pressure, it does that.
Yeah, because they're going to get that pressure in the game, so you might as well instill it in practice. And what about, you know, especially here in Europe, a lot of times, you know, they got a plan maybe, and in that plan incorporated, you know, total of 12 players, which is their team, or 14 players. But then all of a sudden, you know, only 8 players showed up to practice. What's your recommendation there? Or even if the practice is not running real well, you know, do you continue to follow that practice or do you make an adjustment?
Hey, I always say don't be afraid to break it down and switch, you know, routes where you're going. You know, you've got to change gears in a manner in which it will help your team. And you know, again, not every player is the same. Not every team is the same. So you've got to be able to adjust on the fly. Kids can't do that themselves. That's the coach manager's job, to be able to adjust on the fly and identify those things that are working and not working. And you know, one of the things I can tell you is that I think as coaches, we have way too many meetings with our teams. You know, they learn more by doing, okay, not by listening. You know, so we got to show them, you know, so switch courses when you have to. Hey, if you know your team is hitting well, but they're not fielding anything, work on it, but don't sit there and take infield over and over again. Break it down, you know, and then go to infield after that. You know, again, it's about not being robotic. It's about being athletic and free-minded and being able to switch gears.
And one last question on the practice organization, which I think is interesting because you manage at high levels. When you had professional teams and you had your spring training, you had to lay out practices. If you had to emphasize a particular area of the game, obviously you like to emphasize them all, but you don't have enough practice. Nobody has enough practice to emphasize everything and make it really good. But if you had to make part of your practice very, geared to one area that's going to help you win ball games, where do you start?
I think the fundamentals, of like I said before, playing catch. Okay, and proper fundamentals in fielding, proper fundamentals in hitting. But when you look at the whole gamut of those things, I think sometimes as coaches it can be overwhelming. Yeah. You say, oh my God, I got to do all these things. So I almost tried to scale it back and pick one or two things in practice I wanted to get accomplished. And, for instance, I had a team in that I was managing in the Can-Am League. I was in Brockton, Massachusetts. And that team could hit well, okay, very, very well. But we had trouble on defense. So what we started doing is we started limiting our batting practice, and we got out there and we started playing little games with these were with professionals. We started playing little infield, outfield games just to keep it light, keep it fun. And, when you do that, it's not overwhelming. It's not, and we got better at our defense, and sometimes, hey, coaches don't like to hear this, but sometimes you got to stop practice. Say, you know what? I'm not mad at you. It's time to shut it down. You know what? You've done all you can today. You've given me everything you can. Head home. We're going to start on this tomorrow. Don't overanalyze. Don't push it to paralysis, like I said before. That's the worst thing. The biggest thing we got to do as coaches, we got to get our kids to relax and get out there and be able to play the game. When they're relaxed, they'll be at their best.
I like that because I think, coaches will say, well, I'm going to practice for 2 hours, and they expect to go all the way 2 hours. But sometimes you end up on a good note. Why continue if things are going really well? Or sometimes, like you said, they're not doing well. Let's cut it off, and we'll come back tomorrow and start all over again.
Absolutely. You got to get in and you got to get out. You got to have your plan. Get as far along that plan as you can, and shut it down. Go home. Let them go be with their families a little bit.
Now we're gonna go to Cash. Now Cash, you and I met in 1999. Both in independent ball, and we're fortunate enough to be on Team USA at the professional level. Competed against the eight teams that would be in the 2000 Olympics. So obviously you've seen a lot of players. You've dealt with a lot of players, and here at the clinic, in our first session indoors, it was a classroom session. You talked about certain things, and one of the things I heard was that we tend to focus a lot on mechanics and fundamentals, and that's good. You want to stay with that, but at the same time, the mental game is so important that we forget sometimes that, or maybe we don't know how to teach the mental game of baseball. So what were the things you emphasized to the coaches when it came to the mental game of baseball?
Well, Chris mentioned the word relaxation, and I think that is a extremely important aspect of being the best player that you can be. I also think there's two other things, and one thing that I learned in my career as my career went along. And I played for 10 years, and I got released, and I was out of the game for 2 years. And when I came back after teaching the game for 2 years, I started practicing what I preached. And I really looked back on my career and kind of put together when I was my best. And when I was my best, number one, I was confident. And what I used to do is I put on my batting gloves. I put three letters on my left-handed batting glove. CCR, and on my right batting glove, I put HHH, and we're talking about hitting here, but the left batting glove covered the whole game. HHH on my right batting glove, as pertaining to hitting, I wanted my head, my hands, and my hips to work in a way that allowed me to be the best hitter I could be. But before my physical approach worked, I had to have the CCR, and that those letters stand for confidence, concentration, and relaxation. And what I figured out is that if I was missing any of those three, confidence, concentration, or relaxation, that my physical mechanics didn't work as good as they were going to work if I had those other three. So I feel like confidence as a coach, we need to build confidence in a player. The game of baseball will break you down. I mean, we had a whole segment where we talked about failure. So the game inherently breaks a player down through failure. So what we've got to do is educate these players that, hey, you know, going 3 for 10 is pretty doggone good. That 70% failure rate is good, that you don't have to get a hit every time you go to the plate. And when you go to the plate and you look at your at-bats in segments of 10 or 20, then you don't live and die with every at-bat. So when you realize that, it gives you a little more confidence. And through confidence, it leads to relaxation. If you're confident, you can relax because, you know, you don't have to get a hit every at-bat. And then through confidence and relaxation, it allows your brain to concentrate and to have a game plan when you go to the plate. So, you know, I just feel that with confidence, concentration, and relaxation, that's when truly you'll play your best and your physical mechanics will shine.
And with confidence, I get the impression when you say confidence, it because a lot of coaches sometimes tend to focus on the negatives, and it seems to be a negative game a lot of times.
Absolutely. Like I said, the game is inherently negative. And negatives jump out at people. And, you know, personally, parents are worse than coaches. They're up in the stands. They're nervous. They're screaming and yelling at their kids. They're wanting them to perform. And I just, you know, want to send a little message out to the parents. If we're trying to concentrate on the task at hand, when a parent is yelling and screaming from the stands, what they're doing is they're stealing that player's ability to concentrate. Because inherently a player, you know, I was a cattle rancher growing up. And one thing I'll tell you about cows, and I know a lot about cows because I've worked with them my whole life being from Oklahoma, is that a baby calf and its mother knows their moo. And a mother cow can find a calf in a herd of 500 cattle, how they know which one is which. And just like that, a kid hitting at the plate or hitting or playing defense or pitching, they can hear their parents' voice in a crowd of 1,000 people. That one voice will stand out. They know that voice, and when they hear that voice, it distracts them. It takes their anytime a player looks up in the stands at their parents, then they have lost their concentration on what they're doing on the field. So the one thing that I really recommend my parents to do to allow a player to be able to concentrate is to let them play the game, be positive, and talk to them about what they need to talk about after the game. And I think they will get a lot better results.
Folks, now you know why we're called Baseball Outside the Box. You heard an outstanding analogy. First time on Baseball Outside the Box where you had an analogy of a cow relating to, you know, young kids, and it was so spot on because right away I could think of that right away, thinking, you know, boy, they hear their kid's voice. I mean, you couldn't have said it any better. That was outstanding. Gotta love it. I learned something. Matter of fact, Chris even said right here, he said, I just learned something now. At first I was a little worried when Cash was going with the cows here, Lloyd. I'm not sure where he was leading it. And then all of a sudden I go, wow, that sparked it right away, and I really understood it really well. So that was outstanding. Chris, now I know I thought it was an interesting thing because we talk about fundamentals all the time, and you did an infield talk, and one of the things you stressed about infield was, which you don't hear very often, I thought was outstanding, was about breathing. I want you to tell the audience what you told the coaches about breathing, why it's so important, and how to do it.
Yeah, and, you know, I had learned this from a sports psychologist and didn't realize the importance of it before I'd heard it. But they told me that, you know, the biggest thing that especially infielders do wrong is they will actually get so tense they will hold their breath before fielding a ball. You know, and when you hold your breath, you know, you could break it down this way. When you hold your breath, it's basically the same feeling as having an anxiety attack. You know, you're not allowing free flow of blood and of air through your body. So, you know, I had a sports psychologist tell me, teach your players how to breathe in through their nose, out through their mouth, especially before they field a ground ball. They should have that breath coming out of their body, which softens their hands. And that will not only make them move faster laterally and you know, fast twitch as we talk about, it will help them as they field the ball to have softer hands and be able to be able to use those soft hands for, you know, obviously to make the tough plays.
You know, Cash, you also brought up, which was interesting too, in that same relations, we were talking about breathing. You mentioned hitters have a tendency to hold their breath.
Yeah, they do. And this falls into the relaxation part of the CCR. When you hold your breath, your chest constricts. And when people ask me to describe what a good hitter looks like, they flow. A good hitter flows. And I don't think as an athlete, as a scuba diver, as anything, that when we are lacking oxygen, that our body is going to work correctly. So this is something that I learned. You know, Chris said he learned something. I learned, you know, we learn something every day in this game. And let me tell you something. The coaches that I've been around that think they know it all are the ones you better watch out for. I've been in the game for 25 years. I grew up in the game. My father played in the big leagues for 10 years, spent 50 years in the big leagues. And I've been around the game my whole life. And I can think of at least five things that just coming here to the Ukraine and working with these kids by listening to you, Pete, and to you, Chris, that I have learned. I knew breathing was important, but I never knew how to breathe correctly. I learned that. I mean, this game can teach you something every day. And as a coach or a parent, we've got to be open to that and be very cautious. When you think you know it all, when you think you're great, that's when this game will really humble you.
All right. And Chris, I know you also, you know, when we talk about infielders, give us a little idea of some of the techniques you might have talked. I know you talked about middle infielder, second, short, turn and double plays. Maybe a few important things in those positions that you related to the coaches to make sure they work with their kids on.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of players, especially at a young age, learning to play many different positions, especially the middle infield. Yeah, I think the middle infield footwork really lends itself to playing many other positions on the field. So, you know, what I try to stress to them is that it's athleticism, it's ready position but not stiff, it's prepared but not holding our breath and not, having a tense, you know, way about us. And, you know, again, keeping it simple, keeping it light, but, you know, like when we were talking about like turning double plays and things like that, you know, we really, there used to be like six different ways to turn a double play back when we were all growing up, you know,
and
you got confused. You're like, which one should I use here? And, you know, when you keep it simple and on a double play, you know, at second base, I like a simple, you know, left-handed toe tap of the foot, or a throw coming from third base, I like to come across the back, you know, that way you're clearing your way, around the runner, you know, and there's a lot of different rules. Now, remember, when we played, they used to be able to take you out a lot more than they can now. So, you know, you can hang in there a little longer now with the rules and things like that. That. Me personally, I'd like to still see a little bit of hard slide going in there all the time. That's just the way you play the game, right? We don't want to see anybody getting hurt, of course. But, you know, so I tried to stress that, you know, the footwork around the bag should always be athletic, should always be moving. You don't want to be still in those positions, especially. You know, especially there, you're not robots. You know, you got to really move around that bag athletically, keep your feet moving, and be ready for anything.
Yeah, you know, and I thought it was very interesting because I know the audience around the world are like me, and they think that at the major league level, there's some, they teach, you know, complicated things, special things, and you said that they keep it simple at that level when they're teaching even a pivot on a double play.
Absolutely. So, you know, really when you look at the game, whether it's hitting, whether it's fielding, you want to keep it simple, but you, as a coach, what you really want to remind yourself is you're trying to subtract excess movement. Okay, when you subtract excess movement, you've simplified it, okay? And you've also taken a part away that is taking up time for you to be able to make the play. You know, I made the point during the clinic that, you know, players are faster, players are stronger now. But the speed of the game, boy, it's quick now. You got to get it and go. You know, we used to teach a lot more rounding off of everything before. You know, now you got to get that ball and, you know, be in a loaded position on your back leg. Arms are a little stronger now. You can really, and especially as the kids get older, I'm not talking about young kids there, but, you know, so it's really all about keeping it simple, keeping it direct, getting rid of excess movement.
You know, another thing I learned, you went to first base and you worked with the coaches at first base and receiving the ball, balls in the dirt. Something I learned that I thought was very important that our audience needs to know. And they, you know, some coaches may know it, but, you know, I've been in the game 35 years and I didn't know it. So like Cash said, you're learning something constantly. If you're not, you're not getting any better. You talked about the first baseman ball in the dirt right at you, that if, and I want you to explain it, you know, when you backhand the ball and when you forehand the ball, explain that technique because that made a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you something, is that, and this is, Pete, this is one of the funniest things about what we do, is that, you know, Cash and I, you know, we went over everything that we were going to go over this workout, and we kind of traded notes a little bit about first base play, because that wasn't necessarily our natural position, but we had to learn to play that later in life. And, you know, one of the things we talked about is how, you know, we were taught later in life by some really good coaches how you pretty much backhand every ball you can possible. As a right-hander, the one play that you will forehand is the ball on the left side of your knee, and you would be obviously opposite for the opposite throwing arm. But I got to tell you, by backhanding it, you keep it simple and almost reacting to the forehand. Your body knows how to react to the forehand; it just does it. But main thing was working ground up. Okay, was big. Low to high, not high to low. Simple. We all as coaches know that. You know, hey, that was one of my biggest mistakes, I'll tell you, as a fielder when I was a young man. So it was really keep it simple, but try to work ground up and backhand as much as you can, forehand the one to the left side of the knee.
Yeah, and the backhand just feels more natural when you're doing the backhand. I really loved it. And I didn't teach that before. And the other thing I loved about this clinic with you guys is that, you know, here's guys, and I want everybody to understand this. Here's guys with, if you add it all up, 60, 70 years of professional experience dealing with not just kids but pro guys, and yet you try to keep everything as simple as possible. And the two things that these coaches kept saying to us, even when we went out with them for dinner, they kept remembering things like the breathing, you know, that Chris brought up, and now we're going to get the Cash, because Cash talked to the guys about hitting. And you know what? You hear hitting instructors all the time. They're talking about mechanics, the balance, the contact point, you know, this and that. But what we heard from Cash through the whole weekend, and I want coaches to really think about this, because he talked about head discipline, and he talked about how important it is. And sometimes you tend to think, well, yeah, of course, you got to watch the ball, and the head makes you watch the ball. But this was way deeper than that. It just seemed like you can correct so many things when you're controlling your head. And, Cash, I want you to get into this. We got time. I want you to talk about that, because these coaches really, really enjoyed that and also remembered it so well that these hitters are going to be better just because of that.
Well, they heard the word about 72,000 times because I truly believe it's that important. And, you know, we all have mentors in this game. And a huge mentor for me with my time with the Montreal Expo organization, where I spent 3 years as a minor league hitting coach, was a man named Pat Rossler. And, you know, Pat is now the hitting coordinator for the New York Mets, and I truly believe he's one of the best hitting coaches in the world. And Pat has had several influences. Charlie Lau, Walt Reniac were huge on head discipline. And it seemed like Pat had combined a bunch of different hitting philosophies, but through Charlie Lau and Walt Reniac, the head discipline thing was something that he really implemented. And when I learned from him, I realized how important it was, because, you know, I kind of break hitting down when I'm working with young hitters or professional hitters, and I want three body parts to work right. And that on the right batting glove, it's HHH. It's your head, your hands, and your hips. And I always ask kids, what's the most important of those three? And most of them say the hips.
Yep.
Because the hips are is where a lot of power is generated.
Sure.
And they will go to the hips almost every time. But, you know, I tell them, you know, hit this ball off the tee with perfect hips and close your eyes. And the first part of head discipline is you got to be able to see the ball to hit it. And the other thing is your body goes where your head goes. So, and then the third aspect of this is, if you cannot control your head and keep it down through the length of your swing, what I found out is that, number one, I was over swinging. So your head also controls the tempo of your swing. If you can control your head, you're going to have the right tempo to hit the ball as good as you can hit it. And, you know, in hitting, honestly, less is more. And I had a great hitting coach who's in the Hall of Fame when I was with the Braves organization, and his name was Eddie Matthews. His teammate, Hank Aaron, is one everybody remembers, but Eddie hit 500 home runs himself. I'm sure he got a lot of good fastballs hitting behind Hank.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll never forget what Eddie Matthews used to say, and he used to really preach, see how easy you can hit the ball hard with good mechanics. So if you're going to swing in a effortless way, and if you watch major league hitters, many of them hit home runs and it looks like they're barely swinging. Their timing is perfect. They get full extension of contact, and they almost let the pitcher supply the power, but they do it with great mechanics. But if you take the head away from the swing, it's over. I can't tell you how many times I've heard a young coach say, "You're pulling your front shoulder." And I kind of retort to that with, because of all the experience I've had, it's never your front shoulder. Your front shoulder will follow your head. If you get your head down, you cannot pull your front shoulder. Your front shoulder will stay with your head. So what I do in practice is I really overemphasize the head staying down longer in practice than it really needs to in a game, because in a game, everything speeds up. Everything happens faster. Excuse me, my voice is about gone, but excuse me. But everything speeds up in a game. And so if your adrenaline, the pitchers are throwing harder, people are in the stands, so everything happens faster in the game. So if you overemphasize your head staying down in practice, it should be where it needs to be, and that's head down at contact. And I would like to, for my player's head, even in a game, to stay down at least two clicks past contact, then it can come up. But my suggestion would be to keep your head down through the entire length of your swing till it stops in practice. Overemphasize that in practice, and it'll be where it needs to be in a game.
And you had a great drill. I want the audience to know, because we, even though it's a podcast, you can relate the drill, you can understand it. And folks, you know, just so you know, these guys have been talking all weekend. So, and I asked them, and I asked them to continue talking here on the podcast. So, you know, one of the areas that I want everybody to hear is this particular drill that I've never heard of that makes a lot of sense, and I think our coaches can learn. So tell us about the drill with the head down and what you did after that.
The T-touch drill. The T-touch drill is my staple drill. And, you know, Chris, I think a little bit ago was talking about, and you have too, we've all talked about how difficult this game is to play. And some of the best drills in the world are the simplest drills. And this is about as simple a drill as you can get in the game of baseball, and it's done with a tee. You know, my father, God bless his soul, told me this since I was 7 years old, that the batting tee is your best friend, that you will never be too old to hit off of a tee. Because if you don't hit a baseball off a tee right, you're doing something wrong. And it's true to this day. And I believe in the tee 100%. And who reinforced that the tee was a great hitting tool was a man named Albert Pujols. When I was with the Expos, we shared a complex with the Cardinals. And every morning I would be out there with my Expos guys. And they had one side of the batting cage, the indoor cages, and we had the other. So I would be out there working with kids, and Albert would be out there before anybody else hitting off a tee. He had a tee routine for 30 minutes he hit every day. And I would I would see Albert out there every single day. And what I did was finally one day I just had to ask him. I said, "Albert, how important is the tee to you?" He told me, what I asked him was, if you had a choice, would you rather hit off the tee or would you rather take BP? He told me, I felt like if I got my tee work in, if BP got rained out, batting practice got rained out, that I had a chance because off the tee, I could think about my mechanics. When it gets into BP, it's more game, thought process. And of course, in a game, we do not want to think about mechanics. We want it to happen. So, you know, Albert was big on the tee, and this drill is a simple drill called tee touches. What you do is you set a baseball up on the tee. You take your normal swing. You finish your swing. And when your swing is finished, if you have to move your head to find the tee where the ball was hit, then when you finish your swing, you touch the tee. And if you have to move your head to touch that tee, you've lost your head discipline. It's that simple. And the biggest reason we lose our head discipline is we want to see where the ball goes. When you do everything right, seeing where the ball goes, I promise you, is not going to make it go further.
Yeah.
I promise you. And number one, it teaches you to keep your head down, teaches you how to have a consistent swing tempo. And it's the simplest, probably best drill in the history of the game, and it's called T-touches. And you finish your, and here's the one thing where a player can really mess up on that, because I'm a believer that you want to accelerate through the ball as far as you can. Don't get in a hurry to touch the tee. I'm kind of a two-hand finish guy. I know there's some big, strong guys in the big leagues that can hit the ball a long way with a one-hand finish, but I was a skinny guy when I played, and I had to maximize my power. So what I had to do to maximize my power was to finish with two hands and accelerate through the ball as far as I could to hit the ball as far as I could. I wasn't 270 pounds like Aaron Judge. I just wasn't that player. So I had to do everything perfect to hit a home run. So if you let go too early to touch the tee, you'll decelerate your swing. So hang on with two hands. Finish your swing. Give yourself a one count. And if you have to move your eyes or your head to find that tee, you didn't have your head down. So that teaches you the tempo of your swing, and it teaches you to keep your head down through the hitting, the contact point, all the way through your swing. And I think if I get a lot of coaches ask me this question, they say, if you could teach one thing to one player, if you had 10 minutes with him, what would you teach him? And I said it would absolutely be head discipline, because if they don't have it and they do get it, it'll put 10 to 15 points on your batting. I've gotten a lot of hits with my backside not getting through. I've gotten a lot of hits by the ball getting in on me a little too deep and inside out in that ball to right field. But I've never gotten a hit in my life where my head was in the third base dugout and I was a right-handed hitter. Never. So your head can save you when the other two break down. So I think it's that important.
Fantastic and simple. And if you're a parent, a player, and even a coach, if you thought the batting tee was for just T-ball or young kids, that should have changed your mind right away, because you just heard it from a professional that the batting tee is so important. All right, here's how, you know, we obviously have a time where we have to end the show. There's always a limit to the show. We hate to end because we've got some great stuff. But, Chris, the way we always, and Cash, the way we always end the show is we give you your time, anything that, because I know during a podcast you're talking about stuff, and then all of a sudden when you switch people, you think, oh, I should have said that or I should have said this. So this is kind of your time. Any advice, any last-minute advice you want to give our coaches, players, and parents around the world? It could be anything you want. Chris, I'll let you lead it off, and Cash will close it off.
You know, first I just want to say all those volunteer coaches out there and high school coaches and college coaches and everybody that does this for a lot of the love of the game, you know, I really want to pat you on the back right now and say how important you are to the game and how much appreciated you are, because you guys are out there doing what needs to be done. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that you know, I can pass along is, you know, don't be so hard on yourself. Don't be so hard on these kids. You know, keep it light. Keep improving. Keep trying to, you know, one step at a time. Don't try to build Rome in a day or the Ukraine in a day. You know, I would simply try to, you know, set your goals, obtain those goals, then, you know, get to the next project and you know, continue to build from there. So, you know, again, you know, my biggest thing in this game is you coaches, you are your parents, your mentors, but you're human, you know, and just, you know, cut yourself some slack sometimes. I think coaches are so hard on themselves. Again, Cash said in the beginning, you can't judge yourself by wins and losses. You know, this is about helping to create human beings, helping to better the game. And you know, what we did here was we took baseball and we basically, you know, we used it as a tool to unite two countries. And that's what we have to keep doing. So thank you, Pete. I really appreciate it being on here.
Well, we appreciate you being. This is your second time on the show. We gave Cash a little bit more time simply because you've done the show already.
He's earned
that little time. And on behalf of also the International Sports Group, I want to thank you for, you know, giving up your time, your valuable time, to come out here and work with the Ukraine coaches.
You know, ISG is so special in everything that they're doing. And, you know, they're again, they're building baseball one country at a time. But what you guys are doing is amazing. And, you know, I love being a part of it. And I know you get hit up on Facebook all the time because their coach is wanting to be here and be a part of this. And it's truly special. So thank you.
Yeah, and we are pretty selective of who we pick as coaches because of the importance of developing coaches worldwide. We need good teachers, good instructors, good mentors, good leaders, and, you know, great role models, and you guys all fit that category. Cash, I'm coming to you now. Last-minute advice for our coaches.
Well, first of all, I just want to thank you and ISG for the two trips of my life. I've been with a man named Pete Caliendo. Yeah. We went to Australia, and we were a part of Team USA, which is something I'll never forget. And to ask me to come to Europe for the first time in my life, I mean, the baseball has taken me all over the world, but it's never brought me to Europe. And it's been another trip of a lifetime. And ISG and what you do is special. You have a tremendous passion, and you have carved out a niche in this game that was greatly needed. And I am thrilled to be a part of it, and would love to do it again. Anytime you want me, I'm there for you, buddy. But you know, getting back to the game and young players and young coaches, the biggest piece of advice I could give a coach, and you know, sometimes we get frustrated, and sometimes we want to yell, and sometimes we want to jerk knots in guys' tails. And you know, we spent a good portion of the show talking about failure. And the one thing that I can promise any coach out there is a player doesn't make an out on purpose. He doesn't swing and miss on purpose. He doesn't strike out on purpose. And when I try to get kids to relax in the game, I tell them, I want you to look at your at-bats in segments of 10 or 20. Try to go 3 for 10. Don't live and die with every at-bat. And, you know, I've coached this game a long time. And am I perfect? Heck no. Am I fiery? Heck yeah. All you got to do is go to YouTube and punch my name in, and you can see it. But I will say this, what I've learned from the best managers I've ever played for, including two of the greatest the game's ever seen, Bobby Cox and Tony La Russa, they all seem to have the same mantra, and it's be on time, bust your tail, that's hustle, play as hard as you can, and try to be a professional on and off the field. And that's most great managers' rules. And, you know, as a player and as a coach, The one area where I might get a little sideways with a player is if they don't control the only things they can really control in the game, and that's their attitude and their effort. Mm-hmm. And if a player comes to the game, to the ballpark with a great attitude, and he gives you all he's got, you're going to have your 0-for-5s. Heck, you're going to have, hey, I went 0-for-16 at one point in my career. And I felt like I was never going to get a hit again as long as I lived. But I had a manager that brought me into the office and said, hey, keep on swinging. We're not going to send you down. And he took the pressure off of me, and I went on a 16-game hitting streak, the longest hitting streak. And it's because a manager took the time to tell me to relax. Nothing bad was going to happen. He had my back. And so, you know, if a player doesn't hustle, if a player has a bad attitude, I think it's worthy of some correction. Other than that, this game is fraught, full of failure. It's the greatest players in the world fail 70% of the time at the plate. So as long as they're giving you a good attitude and a good effort, always have those guys back. If you need to pull them off to the side, and always correct them in private. Try not to do it in front of their teammates. Try not to do it in front of their parents. And everybody's life will be a lot easier. But I do believe that attitude and effort, if it's not brought to the field, it needs to be corrected, because that's how you give respect back to the game.
Great stuff. That was Cash Beauchamp and Chris Carminucci with the Arizona Diamondbacks. I want to thank both of them for a fantastic show. I also want to thank the Arizona Diamondbacks for allowing these guys to come here and work with the coaches, because they're building something great here in Ukraine. And we're going to be right back with a special guest, one of the coaches from Ukraine, and we're going to talk to them with how they work with their players to develop their players, especially since they haven't been doing it for a long time. I think you can learn a lot from them, because they've got some pretty good coaches here also. So we'll be right back with your Ukrainian coach. Welcome back to Kyiv, Ukraine. We just got done with Chris Carminucci and Cash Beauchamp, and now we're going to sit down and talk to two outstanding coaches who have been involved in the International Sports Group coaching clinic here in Kiev, Ukraine. They have a great organization. They've all their volunteers have organized the clinic throughout the whole time from start to finish. Outstanding from the time we started to the time that we ended. So first thing I'm going to do is we have three people here right now, two coaches and also one of the dads of the, one of the players. He is going to help us translate. So first, I want to have him introduce himself. He speaks English. He's just going to give you his name and what he, you know, what he does here in baseball.
Hi there, I'm Pavlo Boyko, and I'm a baseball dad of two.
And it's got to be fun being a baseball dad, no?
Yeah, indeed.
Well, we really appreciate you helping us with this because we have some great information that for our coaches around the world, so you know. There's great things that they're doing here in Ukraine. And if you think they don't know baseball in Ukraine, well, you're not really doing your homework because they've got some great players here, great talent, and also they've got some pretty good coaching. But they also believe in coaches' education, so that's why ISG has hosted the coaches program here. So first thing I'm going to do, just like I did with Pablo, is I'm going to have both coaches introduce themselves, just say their names, and then we will begin the interview. So the first coach.
Меня зовут Евгений Ткаченко.
And don't worry if you didn't understand them. We call him Eugene. So that's, I'm going to call him during the interview, Eugene. And our second coach.
Станислав Соматов.
Okay, I think maybe you got that a little bit better, but we're going to call him Stash. So we've got Eugene and Stash. So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to start with Eugene. And I know right now Eugene is, both coaches are working indoors with the youth teams. And I'm going to ask him what they're concentrating on with the kids.
В первую очередь мы работаем в зимний период для того, чтобы подготовиться к сезону, да, то есть мы отрабатываем много технических моментов, потому что это как раз то время, которое идет на подготовку перед весенним чемпионатом, ну, весенним-осенним сезоном. То есть мы максимально работаем, подготавливаем питчеров, мы даем игрокам шанс стать питчерами, мы их пробуем на разных позициях, открываем их сильные стороны, развиваем их физически, то есть они растут в подвалах, и мы даем им возможность себя как бы открыть на новых позициях.
Well, as we work with the kids during this winter time, it's a good time not to be wasted and to work on various skills. So in the first place, we work on overall athletic condition of the guys, so pitching, and you've heard that word, that's international, so pitching is one of the skills that we work on, but not only that, we try the kids and the players in different positions and we give them a chance to show themselves as a good pitcher or any different position.
Outstanding. And Stas, ask it to Stas, what fundamental is, they're all important, but ask him what fundamental is really important that they're focusing on throughout the winter.
Зимой мы основное сосредотачиваемся, это, конечно же, на отбивании мяча и, конечно же, на питчинге, то есть на бросках. Над этим мы работаем всю зиму, так как у нас помещения довольно-таки скованные, да, маленькие. Мы тренируемся в подвальных помещениях, и из-за этого мы выкручиваемся, можно так сказать. И постепенно, по чуть-чуть мы входим в сезон. В сезон это мы принимаем участие во всевозможных турнирах зимних, которые в помещениях.
So a fundamental one is obviously hitting, and again, just to confirm what Eugene has just said, is pitching. As we train the kids during the winter time in quite limited space, underground premises, we just have to be creative. And again, this time is not to be lost, and we try to prepare the players for a good season, and we're taking part in all sort of championships, indoor competitions that are taking place during this time.
You know, folks around the world, so you know, what's great about Ukraine, Eastern Europe, and of course this also goes with the Dominican Republic, Cuba, a lot of places that maybe lack some resources because they, you know, it's not their number one sport. They're trying to raise money for to build their field here. They're trying to get equipment, you know, they're developing kids, the sport. This is a little bit like Rocky. If you've seen Rocky before, this is where these guys are training at times. They've built their own indoor facility underground, very nice looking one. But, you know, they're going to do whatever they have to be able to develop their players. They're not going to make excuses. Well, I don't have weights, so I'm not going to weightlift, or I don't have something and I'm not going to do it. They figure out how to get equipment one way or another, and they make, you know, they work with their players on, and you can see the results because during the camp you've seen some pretty good kids with very good fundamentals, and that's a result of these coaches working with those players. Now I'm going to ask Eugene, I want you to, during the clinic, because both gentlemen are a great example of good coaching and guys that want to learn all the time. So not only do they organize the clinic, but they're always at the clinic listening and taking notes and learning, even though they're some of the better coaches. So I'm going to ask Eugene, give me something at the clinic that maybe you picked up that you might begin using with your kids. It's okay, you could say it louder, don't worry.
Буквально сегодня была тренировка у нас после клиники первая. И то, что мне вот больше всего запомнилось, это что бейсбол действительно, в бейсболе очень много поражений. И здесь получается сложность научить детей справляться с этими поражениями, стремиться их преодолевать. Для меня я понял, чем меньше будет поражений у игроков, тем меньше будет поражений у команды, и, соответственно, команда достигнет результатов, больших результатов.
Well, to say one of the critical things that we've learned about was about failure, and that failure is unavoidable, and you just have to manage that. Literally today we had our first practice after the clinic, so I tried to implement some of the principles I've learned during the clinic, and again, having failures is inevitable. It just how you treat them, how you talk to the players, and even with the failures, we'll try to minimize those, we'll try to treat them correctly, and we'll be there, we'll be winning more and more, and in spite of all the failures that will be there in our way.
Okay, Stas, same question.
Мне в этой клинике запомнилось, конечно же, как Кэш рассказывал про отбивание, так как я больше с детьми работаю с отбиванием, и я всегда как-то детям рассказывал, что надо смотреть на мяч, но я никогда не знал, что есть дисциплина головы. И вот это было такое довольно интересное открытие. Мне понравились и упражнения, которые Кэш и Питер показывали. И в будущем мы будем их применять. Посмотрим, какие это даст результаты.
So the code word after this clinic for me is head discipline. We concentrate on hitting. I was teaching the players about hitting and about watching the ball all the times. But again, I haven't thought and I haven't dreamt about this head discipline. So right now, with this notion of head discipline and having your eyes all the times on the ball and being really disciplined and being really religious about where your eyes are, is a critical skill for me as a coach, but also something to give to the kids, to younger players. So that's something that we will definitely concentrate on, and again, we'll add some fun element around this mock-up phrase, head discipline.
And we've talked about it on the show many times, you know, that one of the most difficult things to get young kids to do is to, you know, pay attention and to concentrate. And, you know, concentration and paying attention is a skill. It's a skill that you have to work on. And it's not just something you tell coaches, hey, you know, you tell players, listen, and they're going to listen. That's something that you have to teach them, how to listen, you know, how to pay attention with their eyes and their ears. And the more they learn, the better they get, and the smarter they are. So one thing they do very well in Kiev, Ukraine, the players that we noticed at the camp, they really pay attention. They really focus. They want to learn. They're hungry. And it's great to work with young kids like this. So final question. I'm going to start off with Eugene. And it's a very, not an easy question, but it's a question that's important. And I want everybody to hear this. What is, if you had to pick one of the most difficult things that you've had as a coach working with young kids, what would that one thing that's very hard to work with young kids in a game of baseball?
Я, наверное, скорее всего, применю это для Украины, потому что в Украине есть проблема работать в команде. Поэтому работа в команде, заставить каждого из детей быть в команде, быть за команду, является ключевым тому, чему мы должны научиться. Вот. Я считаю, что это то основное, то, что нужно, над чем нужно работать.
So the one that I would pick would be teamwork. And again, that might have different roots, and that's something that we're trying to work on. But again, it's fundamental and it's critically important to make the kids to work in a team, not only by discipline, not by stick, but also by the carrot, to introduce some fun elements, and again, make them feel and live through this experience of being a team.
And Stas, maybe give me an idea, when a young player in practice fails, what do you do? Are you tough on the kid? Do you help him? Do you give him information? You know, what's your method and technique to help kids when they are struggling a little bit in practice?
Конечно, когда это проходит на первый, когда приходят дети на первые тренировки, у них не получается, мы это пытаемся как-то свести больше к улыбке, к радости и заверить их в то, что у них это все получится со временем.
Well, of course, if we're talking about the very first practices when we have lots of newcomers in our team, the attitude is entirely positive and everything is about giving some confidence to these young guys that everything will be okay. It's really hand-holding, if you wish, experience full of smiles and fun. And again, talking about the abbreviations, CCR, it's all about the confidence. So we try to give as much confidence to those little guys.
All right, fantastic, folks. You heard it from two of the coaches from Ukraine Baseball and Softball Federation. Matter of fact, I mentioned Eugene is a national coach with the Ukraine Baseball, and Stas is with the Kiev Federation, and they're both coaches. They do a great job. And Eugene wants to remind everybody. I think he's reminding me. And maybe Chris Carminucci and Cash Beecham, because, you know, Chris is a scout. So maybe Eugene is reminding us that he's a pitcher still, and he still pitches. Now, I haven't seen him pitch, but, you know, even I pitch, so I'm not sure which one of us is better. But maybe we'll test it later on today or tomorrow in the gym. So just for everybody around the world to know, these guys are great people here. I want to thank Eugene. I want to thank Stash, and I want to thank Pablo for being here and doing the podcast. This is something special for the podcast where we get a chance to interview coaches from Ukraine. And also want to tell you that these are some of the finest people that we've met all over the world. If you've never been to Kiev, Ukraine, please come. It's a beautiful, beautiful first country. And also Kiev is a beautiful city. And you will meet some great people, great hosts. we could not have asked for better hosts and friends in the game of baseball. So remember, this is Pete Caliendo. I'm the host of Baseball Outside the Box. Don't forget, please, go to our Twitter at Baseball Out. Go to our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. And also my email, info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. Email me any questions you might have. And remember, coaches' education is the key to building the foundation of our sport. So keep getting smarter by listening to the show, the interviews, baseball's best coaching minds with innovative thoughts that like to challenge the status quo. Again, Pete Caliendo, have a great coaching day and see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.